Welcome to Coffee Table Mythos. I'm Eliza.
And I'm Leah.
Grab your favorite beverage and let's talk myths. What are you drinking?
I am drinking a Lilikoi Lychee Rain. It's a little floral.
Whoa.
I usually don't drink things that taste floral. Like when I drink teas, I don't like teas that taste floral. So it's strange that I can drink this. What are you drinking?
I am not drinking caffeine at the moment because for some reason this is making me more awake.
Okay.
I am drinking Gatorade Zero Glacier Cherry flavor.
The white one.
The white one.
Nobody knows flavors.
Right. And and then I'm also drinking the last Bellhaven beer can. So disclaimer for this episode, this one's going to be pretty adult content. This is not just going to have some cussing in it, but also inappropriate content of the sexual sort. I don't want to go into too much detail. I'm going to give it like a few seconds to get the kids out of the way. If you don't care for anybody under the age of 18 to listen to this, I mean, I did warn you. Because we're talking about the Minotaur today.
Yeah, so I should clarify, it's probably the first half where we're talking about the Minotaur that you have to really worry about it. The Hydras in the second part, and that's our pretty normal
stuff. Yeah. You sent me a TikTok, I think, on the Minotaur, and you were like, man, this myth is fucked up. And I was like, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what happened. So the Minotaur for Greek week. Now the Minotaur derives from the ancient Greek compound name that roughly translates to the bull of Minos. In Crete, the Minotaur was known as Asterion, a name shared by Minos's foster father, and the use of the word Minotaur as a generic term for this species of bull-headed creatures developed mainly in the 20th century in the fantasy genre of fiction.
That makes sense.
Yes.
Because outside of like games and stuff, I have only heard of this one particular story.
Exactly. So we're going to talk about the origin story of the Minotaur and the story of thereafter. Now, after ascending the throne of the island of Crete, Minos, with his brothers as rulers, Minos prayed to Poseidon, god of the seas, to send him a snow-white bull as a sign of the god's favor. Now, Minos was to sacrifice the bull to honor Poseidon, but because the bull was so beautiful, Minos kept the bull instead, and believing Poseidon would accept a substitute, Minos sacrificed a different bull.
That was your first mistake.
Right. So to punish Minos, Poseidon made Minos' wife, Pasiphae, fell in love with the bull, the white bull, the bull that he tried tricking Poseidon to not get. She had a craftsman named Daedalus fashion a hollow wooden cow, which she climbed into in order to mate with the bull.
That's Icarus's dad.
Oh! Now, as a result, we have the Minotaur. Now, Pasiphae nursed the Minotaur, but it grew in size and became ferocious.
Wow.
With no natural source of nourishment, the Minotaur devoured humans for sustenance. Following the advice of an oracle at Delphi, Minos had Daedalus construct a ginormous labyrinth to contain the Minotaur, located near Minos's palace in Knossos. Classically, the Minotaur is depicted with the head and tail of a bull and the body of a man. The Minotaur has been depicted at the center of the labyrinth. During the Middle Ages, Ovid's Latin account of the Minotaur did not describe which half was bull and which half was man. The depiction of a head and torso of a man on a bull's body comes from Virgil's description of the Minotaur in Book 6 of the Aeneid.
So that's interesting. It's like, it's more like a satyr, where the bottom half's a goat, but the top half's a man. It's like the opposite of the...
Yeah, depending on which version you're reading. Now, in the story of Theseus and the Minotaur, Minos' son, Androgeus, was killed by the Athenians, jealous of victories he won at the Panathenaic Festival. There were also stories that he died at Marathon by the Cretan bull. Commonly, it is said Minos avenged his son's death by waging war, and in other versions, Athens received a plague as a penalty for killing Androgeus, and Aegis averted such plague by sending young men and women to the Minotaur.
Jeez.
Minos required 7 Athenian youths and 7 maidens drawn by lots, or a lottery, made me think of the Hunger Games.
That's what I was just gonna say.
To be sent every 7th or 9th year, and then in someone counts every year,
ooh,
into the labyrinth to be devoured by the Minotaur. And I know what's disgusting about that is that I was like reading that, I was thinking, well, what does the meat rot? How long does one human like satiate the Minotaur? Does he like have like a place to keep the meats like from going bad?
He has a Frigidaire.
I had a lot of questions about that, but at the same time I was thinking, why am I thinking about the logistics of how he could survive like 7 to 9 years on,
or even 1 year,
14 people?
Right. Because, like, what, does he just chase them around and they get fed so they stay alive until he catches the next one?
See, then I was thinking about that whole thing, and I was like, what, it's like a person a year or something? It would actually be more, because there's 14 people.
Right, and if it was 14 in 1 year, what is that? Only every so many days? Like, 27 days?
And then they could have made their own tribe if they, like, were technically youths, depending on how old they were.
Yeah. And if they survived long enough, they could have kids.
We are getting way too into that. Anyway. So Theseus volunteered as tribute to slay the Minotaur, and he promised Aegis, his father, he would put up a white sail on his way home if he survived and was successful. But the crew would put up a black sail if he was killed. Back in Crete, Minos' daughter, Ariadne, fell madly in love with Theseus and helped him navigate the labyrinth. And in most cases, she gave him a ball of thread to retrace his steps. And all I kept thinking was The Princess and the Goblin. And if anybody doesn't know what I'm talking about, look that shit up. It's a 90s classic based off of a book series.
They came out in the 90s?
I think so. I don't know if you remember this, but in the old VHS versions, there was a message from Princess Irene's grandmother about what you should do when you get lost by, like, calling a number. Yes.
I don't know, like, my brain just assumes that movies like that are older since, like, Sleeping Beauty and Cinderella are so much older.
Maybe it was from the 80s and I didn't know. But I thought it was, like, the 90s.
It might be, because they had, like, the little card that she talked about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was crazy. But anyways, so depending on the version, Theseus killed the Minotaur with either his bare hands, a club, or a sword. He then led the Athenians out of the labyrinth with Ariadne and sailed away from Crete. Now, don't get too romantic, though, because Theseus abandons Ariadne on the island of Naxos before sailing back to Athens, and he neglected to put up the white sail. So the king presumed Theseus dead and committed suicide, throwing himself into the sea, which secured the throne for Theseus.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it's really fucked up. So there's another version where the Etruscans pair Ariadne with Dionysus and never with Theseus.
Okay.
Which I think makes more sense. Now, the fight between Theseus and the Minotaur is commonly depicted in Greek art, and the ruins of Minos' palace at Knossos were discovered, but the labyrinth of the myth never was. But get this. Due to the rooms, staircases, and corridors in the palace, some archaeologists suggest that the palace itself was the labyrinth, with 1,300 maze components, but this generally is discredited. When I read that, I just kept on thinking, you know that house in San Jose, California?
The Winchester house.
Yeah. Like how there's rooms and there's like
stairs that go to ceilings.
That don't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. That's literally how I depicted how crazy this palace was.
That makes sense. And even just like a normal palace can be big enough to be easy to get lost in.
But honestly though, like that would be a horror film. Like, can you imagine? Okay, we're going to take 7 girls and 7 boys, and we're going to sail you to this palace to kill you. And you think that you're going to this labyrinth, but they don't tell them that the labyrinth's actually the palace that they're staying in before they're supposedly going to the labyrinth the next day.
Oh, jeez.
And the whole thing is them getting killed off one by one by the Minotaur. I am too invested in this idea. And I'm just like, going to say,
call California. Call Hollywood. Yeah.
I am copywriting that shit, because that is my idea. I just made that up. Anyway, so some mythologists regard the Minotaur as a solar personification and a Minoan adaptation of the Baal Moloch of the Phoenicians. The slaying of the Minotaur symbolizing the breaking of Athenian tributary relations with the Minoan Crete. I do not know what the backstory is for that. But I'm guessing it's like they're saying that, that there was a time when they would have, Athens would send tributes to Crete, and then they stopped. And there's this myth that came from it.
Cool.
According to A.B. Cook, Minos and Minotaur were different depictions of the same personage, being the sun god of Crete, where the Cretans depicted the sun as a bull.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right. Now, E. Potier considers it probable that in Crete, victims were tortured by being shut up in the belly of a red-hot brazen bull with similar origins to the story of Talos.
That part about being put in like a red-hot thing, that sounds really familiar.
The story of Talos is that he was a Cretan man of brass, like he made brass, and he would heat himself red-hot and clasp strangers in his embrace as soon as they'd landed in the island.
That would be incredibly painful and...
It would kill people.
That is awful.
Yep. Now, in a historical explanation of the myth, there was a time when Crete had main political and cultural potency on the Aegean Sea, and baby Athens paid tribute to Crete, assumingly with young men and women for sacrifice, where the ceremony was performed by a priest disguised with a bull head or mask, which explained the imagery of the Minotaur. Scientifically, the area had very active tectonic plates, and it is believed that the Minotaur myth may have been used to explain the earthquakes. The Minotaur is seen in Dante's Inferno at the seventh circle of hell. The Minotaur is also used in surrealist art by Picasso, possibly inspired by Spanish bullfighting. And there is also a Minotaur in My Little Pony Friendship is Magic named Iron Will.
Yes! he's like an exercise guy.
Is he?
He teaches you how to be, like, tough. So Fluttershy is, like, really timid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she ends up at one of his... like conventions, we'll say.
Oh my god.
And you pay him, and then he teaches you how to be tough.
Oh my god.
And then, of course, it backfires, and they have to like unconfucker Fluttershy and be like, it's okay to be timid sometimes, it's okay to be tough other times, but you don't have to be a jerk all the time.
Yeah. The Minotaur is also mentioned in Gargoyles, the TV show by Disney. He's also in Aladdin, Doctor Who, Legend of the Three Caballeros, Percy Jackson, and so many more. And that is the story of the Minotaur.
So, I guess I was expecting you to go more in depth at the very beginning. So, like, that wasn't as bad as I was expecting it to be.
Oh, it was still bestiality.
I know, but that's why I was like, oh yeah, this is definitely not going to be okay for kids, because I thought you were going to explain it like that. It wasn't that bad how you explained
it. This is
gonna
be terrible. Slides right over it. And you're just like, wait a second.
Exactly.
Yeah. I guess I was just really kind of intrigued by the fact that there was actually a torture device of a brass bull that they put people into and cooked over a fire.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. So I don't know if it's from, like, a movie I saw.
I actually saw ancient paintings or drawings of this contraption, and I was like, that is fucking terrifying.
Yeah, but, like, the image I have in my head is too real to be from, like, a book.
Okay.
So, like, they had to have recreated it somewhere for me to have that. Unless it was a past life experience, in which case, that's not fun.
Nope, that's not cute at all. It's like, if we ever saw one in real life, you'd be like, why are they running? They read their mythology.
We know what that is.
We know what the fuck that is.
We're getting the fuck out of this place.
All right, so we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back after this little commercial. Please stay tuned.
And we're back.
What are we doing? What are you doing? I say we, but really it's you.
What you doing, Willis?
Yeah.
So today we're talking about the Hydra. Or the Lernaean Hydra.
I keep thinking of Captain America.
Yep, I get into it.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah.
Huh!
So, it was called this because its home was the lake of Lerna, south of Argos. The area had springs and a lake, and eventually the marsh was dried up. So, when I was looking into this, because I was wondering if the area was still similar to how it was then. And I ended up on, like,
the abstract for a publication called Lake Lerna Investigating Hercules' Ancient Myth on ui.adsabs.harvard.edu.
And they were like, so the marsh was, it was really wet and it was causing disease and stuff, which makes sense. And it was dried up. But this person that was talking about the actual like soil of the area was saying that it's possible that this story that I'm going to tell is how they
explained
it.
Okay.
So back when the stories of the Hydra were being told, it was believed that this area was one of the entrances to the underworld.
What?
The Hydra's parents were Typhon and Echidna.
Of course.
Everyone's super surprised. I know. Making it the sibling of Kerberos, Orthrus, the Chimera, the Sphinx in some texts, Ladon the Serpent, the Caucasian Eagle, which is the one that eats Prometheus's liver, and the Nemean Lion, etc. They had a lot of babies.
Mm-hmm.
This also means that the Hydra is the grandchild of either Gaia and Tartarus or Hera, depending on the story,
mm-hmm.
which is important for later.
Okay.
So the Hydra starts with 9 heads, 8 mortal, and the center head immortal, while other accounts place the number of heads at 50 or 100, and some skeptics say it was only 1 head, but that the Hydra was accompanied by its offspring, which accounts for the other heads.
Huh.
The oldest images found so far are found on a set of brooches. In these, the Hydra has only 6 heads, but the oldest written number of heads is 9 by Alcaeus, 100 years after the brooches were made, around 600 BCE. The respawning of heads only appears in some writing, starting in the mid-400s BCE by Euripides. For each head cut off, another 2 would grow from the wound, and this is important in the trials of Heracles.
Mm.
So the Hydra was said to have poisonous blood and breath.
Ew.
That it had a huge body and would go ravage the land and livestock nearby.
Brood!
And so, as his second trial, Heracles was told to dispatch the Hydra. Going by the English translation, I think the translation was done by Sir James George Frazier, and I found it on perseus.tufts.edu, of Apollodorus's Bibliotheca. Heracles went to the Hydra's den and found it on a nearby hill. He was driven here on a chariot, piloted by his nephew, Aeolus. This is your warning to skip if you are squeamish.
I don't get to skip.
Nope, you have to suffer. You will suffer with me.
Got it.
So Heracles struck it with, quote, fiery shafts, which was not clarified as shot fire arrows or like lobbed sticks that had fire on them.
I just thought of spears.
Or it could be spears. It wasn't clarified in the version.
Okay.
Which caused the Hydra to approach him. At which point, he grabbed the Hydra with his bare hands, maybe thinking it would work like it did with the lion.
Mm.
Who knows? But the Hydra wrapped itself around his feet and wouldn't let go. Heracles tried to smash its head in with his famed club. That didn't work either. In this version, clubbing the heads caused the 2 new heads to grow in its place, whereas other versions have the new heads growing from sword or sickle wounds.
Mm.
Hera, who we know does not like Heracles, sent a crab to assist the Hydra, which bit his foot. Heracles then stomped on the crab to kill it. At which point, Heracles told Aeolus to take a piece of flaming wood and cauterize the neck wounds before more heads could grow.
How long would it take for these necks to grow?
You know, I don't know, because in the Disney version, it was fast.
It was super fast. Like, I'm thinking Disney version, and then that, and I'm like, maybe they took a little while, and that's just more disgusting when you think about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're fighting off 8 other heads after you hurt the one, maybe it is a little bit slower, but either way, you got a lot of heads to deal with.
That's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
That just sounds like a pain in the ass. I would get so bored of that so fast.
So depending on the version, Aeolus used this, a torch, a brand, or Heracles used his sword dipped in the Hydra's neck and hence coated in its poison to close the wounds so that more heads wouldn't pop up.
That's still nasty.
I agree. After disposing of the mortal heads, he cut off the immortal head,
buried it, and put a huge rock on top so that it couldn't get out somehow. He did this near a road that led to the city of Aelius. Then Heracles slit open the body of the Hydra and dipped his arrowheads in, thus making them poisonous, which would inevitably come back to bite him on the butt.
Right. I was about to say, like, that sounds really fucking familiar.
I didn't go into it because I figured he would be his whole own story.
Yeah. But we did kind of cover that part a little bit.
So the Hydra was now dead and dismembered, but King Eurystheus said that this didn't count towards one of his 10 labors because Aeolus helped him.
That's fucked up.
Scholars believe that this is where the 10 versus 12 labors come into play.
Oh, because it wasn't counted.
Mm-hmm. So Hera placed the Hydra in the sky as a constellation after its death. She also did this for the crab, though its stars are dim due to its failure.
That's sad. You failed me. You shall be dim now.
The Hydra constellation is the largest constellation out of the 88 and occupies 1,303 square degrees of the night sky in the southern hemisphere.
It's a lot.
This was the first time I had ever heard of the Hydra constellation.
Same.
Let alone the fact that it's the largest one.
I'm a little disappointed, to be honest.
Right, but the only reason I'm thinking it might be is because it's the southern hemisphere, so it's not something we would see and go, oh, I wonder what that is.
Right.
Also, the Hydra constellation only has one head, and it's presumed that it's the immortal head. So I found on some websites that the Hydra wasn't raised by its mother Echidna, but was rather raised by Hera specifically to kill Heracles.
Well, that's a little vengeful.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she already didn't like him.
I know.
And she has done a lot of things to fuck up his life so far.
Truth.
So in reading about this, we talked about how she involved Ate to make Heracles not the firstborn so that he wouldn't be the king.
Right.
So that's the first thing. Well, then when he was being raised, she's the one that sent the snakes to kill him in his crib. Not Hades like in the Disney movie.
That is so different from the Disney version.
Yeah.
And I'm now even more disappointed. Like,
I was just going to ruin your childhood.
My childhood's been, like, maimed, quartered, put on fire, hung in the wind, and thrown into a lake.
I see.
To the very bottom.
Is it the Hydra's lake?
No. That one's been dried up. This one's a different lake.
Ah.
It's with Nessie.
It's with Nessie in Scotland.
Yeah.
So, regarding the Hydra not being raised by Echidna, but rather by Hera, even though I saw that on a couple websites, it wasn't saying where they got that from, so I'm not sure the original source or how reliable that is.
Mm.
It's possible that that was like a later addition to embellish this story, but I'm not 100% sure. So, in modern times, the Hydra is an evil organization in the Marvel comic universe. It's in most versions of the Hercules movies, including Eliza's favorite, Disney Hercules, even though it's getting less favorite all the times, every time I tell you
every
something
time,
like this.
Every time I learn something about Hercules' actual story, I'm like, the Disney version is its own thing. It is separate from actual Greek mythology, and it lives in its own alternate universe.
That's a good way to say that it. Alternate universe.
That is the only way I can accept it now.
It is the name of a 2009 sci-fi horror movie, which I accidentally saw the monster clip of. No thank you. I don't ever need to watch that.
I need to see it now.
Nopety nope.
What's
nope,
it called?
Nope. Hydra.
Wow. I would never have guessed. I'm looking for the movie.
2009.
Huh.
Oh, that's just like the cover. I don't like it. I don't like the teeth. I don't like the necks.
CGI is pretty apparent. I probably would laugh throughout the whole thing.
It didn't have a very high budget, from what I understand.
They tried really hard. I could give them kudos for that. Like, I'd watch that just to watch it.
You watch that by yourself.
I'd be watching it by myself. I used to watch horror films like that with a group of friends. There's this one about Komodo dragons, 1999. It's about Komodo dragons eating people. And the scary thing is that they actually can eat people in real life.
No, thank you.
So watching that, but I mean, you can tell that it's pretty fucking CGI. That's the kind of shit my sister and I would rent from Hollywood Video or Blockbuster and just like be like, wow, this is absolutely ridiculous. Let's keep watching.
Oh my gosh. So those are things I don't need to watch.
Mm.
It's a monster in the anime / manga series called Overlord.
Okay.
And of course, it's a creature in both D&D and Magic the Gathering. Regarding the art,
I made a cute little procreate drawing of a hydra.
I still haven't seen this version of it.
Where each of its heads are doing something different. And it turned out super cute. I don't know if I'm going to do a realistic version one.
I'm really excited now to see that version of it.
Yeah. The cute one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. I think he turned out adorable. It actually doesn't... I wasn't seeing a gender anywhere, so for most of it, I was just saying the word it.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, that's what's up with the Hydra. And very little information, because it's basically limited to this story involving Heracles.
I've got so many Greek ones I'm, like, now wanting to look at.
Make a list, and then just
I started doing a list, and then I realized I still have to figure out what I'm doing for Norse next week. I'm sorry, guys, it's true. Actually, no, I do know what I'm doing for Norse next week.
Mm.
Just kidding, we talked about this at lunch, like, 2 days ago. I just forgot until just now.
All right, cool.
Cool.
So, reminders, everybody, make sure to check out our art for this week's entities on our Instagram at Coffee Table Mythos. If you want to share any of your own of these beings, make sure to use our hashtag Coffee Table Mythos so that we and our followers can check them out. As always, if you have any stories or requests, please email us at coffeetablemythos@gmail.com. And remember to mention if you want a shout out of a name or handle, or if you'd like to remain anonymous. You can also find us on our Facebook page, Coffee Table Mythos, where you can message us as well.
Check out our merch on Teespring at teespring.com/store/coffee-table-mythos. We are adding more listings as we research more beings and make more art. If you would like to donate to us, you can on anchor.fm/coffeetablemythos. Or you can become a patron through patreon.com/coffeetablemythos. For right now, all donations will go to making this podcast better. Thank you so much for listening. Please give us a like, follow, subscribe, share, and review our podcast if you have the time. We are interested in what you have to say. Also, as a reminder, we do now have a TikTok under Coffee Table Mythos. This is Coffee Table Mythos. We'll catch you next time.